This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
"Come on," he growled, reaching for her hand and working the connector out of the port. The nearest computer panel went dark. "Auto control system disconnected," lilted a robotic voice overhead, startling Thorne. "Engaging default system procedures." "Good plan," he muttered, grabbing her ankles. Thorne dragged her slowly into the hallway and propped her up against the corridor wall. Whatever her cyborg parts were made of, it was a lot heavier than flesh and bone. He pressed an ear to her chest again. This time he was met with a faint beat. "Wake up," he said, shaking her. Cinder's head slumped forward. Sitting back on his heels, Thorne screwed up his lips. The girl was horribly pale and filthy from their trek through the sewers, but in the hallway's brightness, he could tell she was breathing, if barely. "What, do you have a power button or something?" His attention fell on her metal hand with the cord and plug still dangling from her knuckle. Grabbing her hand, he peered at it from every angle. He remembered a flashlight, a screwdriver, and a knife in three of the fingers, but he wasn't yet sure what her pointer finger was hiding. If it was a power button, he couldn't see any way of getting at it. The connector cable, though. "Right!" Thorne jumped up, nearly toppling into the wall. He jabbed at the screen that opened the door to the pod ship dock. White lights flared overhead as he entered. He grasped Cinder's wrist and tugged her into the dock, dropping her in between the two small satellite ships that sat like toadstools among the mess of cables and service tools. Panting, he reeled the pod ship charging cord out of the wall, then froze, staring at the girl's cable, at the ship's cable, at the girl. He cursed again and dropped them both. Two males. Even he could tell that they wouldn't connect. Knocking his knuckles against his temple, Thorne forced himself to think, think, think. Another idea flashed, and he squinted down at the girl. She seemed to be growing paler still, but maybe that was a trick of the lighting. "Oh," he said, a new idea dropping into his brain. "Oh, boy, you don't think. Oh, that's disgusting." Shoving away his squeamishness, he gently pulled the girl toward him so that she collapsed over one arm. With his free hand, he searched around her tangled hair until he discovered the tiny latch just above her neck. He looked away as he opened it before daring to peer inside from the corner of his eye. A jumble of wires and computer chips and switches that made absolutely no sense to Thorne filled a shallow compartment in the back of her skull. He let out a breath, glad that the control panel completely hid any brain tissue from sight. At its base, he spotted what appeared to be a small outlet, the same size as the plugs. "Ouch," Thorne muttered, reaching for the pod ship cable again and hoping he wasn't about to make a huge mistake. He wiggled the plug of the recharging cord into her control panel. It snapped into place. He swallowed a breath. Nothing happened. Sitting back, Thorne held Cinder at arm's length. He pushed her hair back from her face and waited. 12 heartbeats later, something hummed inside her skull. It grew louder and then fell silent altogether. Thorne gulped. The girl's left shoulder jerked out of Thorne's grip. He dropped her onto the floor, letting her head lull to one side. Her legs flailed, nearly catching Thorne in the groin, and he shoved himself away from her, planting his back against the pod ship's landing treads. The girl sucked in a quick breath, held it for a few seconds, then released it with a groan. "Cinder, are you alive?" A series of milder spasms worked their way out of her robotic limbs. Then she scrunched up her whole face as if biting into a lemon. Eyelids twitching, she managed to squint up at him. "Cinder?" She eased herself up to sitting. Her jaw and tongue worked silently for a moment, and when she spoke, the words were heavily slurred. "Auto control defaults. Almost drained my power system." "I think it did drain your power system." She frowned and seemed momentarily uncertain before reaching for the cord still plugged into her brain. Yanking it out, she slammed the panel shut. "You opened my control panel?" she said, her words a little clearer with anger behind them. He scowled. "I didn't want to." Her expression was sour as she peered at him, not entirely angry, but not grateful either. They stared at each other for a long time as the engine hummed across the hallway and a light in the corner started to go out, flickering at random intervals. "Well," Cinder finally grumbled, "I guess that was pretty fast thinking." A relieved grin filled up Thorne's face. "We're having another moment, aren't we? If by a moment you mean me not wanting to strangle you for the first time since we met, yes, I guess we are." Cinder slumped back on the floor. "Although maybe I'm just too exhausted to want to strangle anybody." "I'll take it," said Thorne, stretching out on the floor beside her and enjoying the cold hardness of the dock's floor, the obnoxiously glaring lights overhead, the stink of sewage on their clothes, and the perfect sensation of freedom. Book 2. Little Red was a tender young morsel, and the wolf knew she would even be tastier than the old woman. Chapter 11. The egg hissed as it slid into the melted butter, its vivid yolk drizzling into the white. Scarlet brushed a tufted feather off the next egg before cracking it open with one hand, simultaneously pushing the spatula across the bottom of the pan. The oozing whites grew opaque, fluffed up, and developed a crackling film near the pan's edges. Otherwise, the house was silent. She checked in on her dad when she'd gotten home from the fight and found him comatose in her grandma's bed, a bottle of whiskey stolen from the kitchen left open on the dresser. She'd emptied the rest of the whiskey into the garden, along with every other bottle of liquor she could find, then spent 4 hours tossing in her own bed. Her head was full with the previous evening, the burn marks on her dad's arm, the terror in his face, his desperation to find whatever her grandmère had hidden. And Wolf, with his tattoo and his intense looks and his almost convincing tone, "It wasn't me." Letting the spatula balance on the edge of the pan, Scarlet pulled a plate from the cabinet and sliced a hunk of stale bread from the loaf on the counter. The horizon was glowing, and clear sky promised another sunny day. But a wind had kicked up in the night, tossing the corn stalks and whistling past the chimney. A rooster crowed in the yard. Sighing, she spooned the eggs onto the plate before sitting down at the dining table. She shoveled the food into her mouth while her hunger was stronger than her nerves. With her free hand, she reached for the port screen on the table and established a net link. "Search," she muttered through a half-full mouth. "Tattoo. L-S-O-P. Unable to identify command." Grumbling, she typed in the terms and swallowed the last of the eggs while a stream of links came up. Extreme tattoos, tattoo designs, virtual tattoo models, the science behind tattoo removal, the latest in tattoo technology, virtually painless. She tried. "Tattoo. L-S-O-P 962. No patches found." She picked up the bread and ripped out a hunk with her teeth. Forearm tattoo numbers. A collection of images filled the screen. Arms skinny and bulky, pale and dark, covered with garish drawings or displaying small tiny symbols on their wrists. 13s and Roman numerals, birth dates and geographical coordinates. The first year of peace, 1TE, was popular. Jaw beginning to ache, Scarlet dropped the rest of the bread down on the plate and rubbed her palms into her eyes. Street fighter tattoos? Kidnapper tattoos? Mafia tattoos? Who were these people? She stood up and started a pot of coffee. "Wolf," she whispered to herself as the water began to percolate. She let the word linger, feeling it on her lips. To some, a wild beast, a predator, a nuisance. to others, a shy animal who is too often misunderstood by humanity. An uneasiness still lingered in the pit of her stomach. She couldn't get the memory of him out of her head, nearly killing his opponent amid all those spectators before running out into the fields like a man possessed. At the time, she'd believed that the howl she heard minutes later had been a true wolf prowling the farms. They certainly weren't uncommon, not after the Species Protection Act that had been enforced centuries ago, but her certainty was failing. "They call me Wolf at the fights." She put her plate and the empty fry pan into the sink, running cool water over them while she scanned the field's swaying shadows through the window. Soon the farm would be filled with life, androids and workers, and genetically enhanced honeybees. She poured the coffee before it was finished, topping her mug with a splash of fresh milk, and sat back at the table. Wolves. An image of a gray wolf filled the screen, fangs bared, ears flattened. Snowflakes clung to its thick coat. Scarlet dragged her finger across the screen, sending the picture away. The images that followed were more peaceful. Wolves tumbling with their mates, cubs sleeping piled on top of one another, regal white and gray pelted wolves creeping through autumn woods. She chose a link from one of the Species Preservation Societies and scanned the text, pausing when she came to the section on howling. Wolves howl in order to gain the attention of their pack or send territorial warnings. Lone wolves who have become separated from their pack will howl in order to find their companions. Often, the alpha male is the most aggressive howler of the pack. His aggressiveness can be detected in his low-pitched, rough howls when he approaches a stranger. A chill shook Scarlet so hard her coffee splashed up over the rim of her mug. Cursing, she stood to grab a towel and mopped it up, annoyed at being spooked by a stupid article. Did she honestly think that the crazy street fighter had been trying to communicate with his pack? She threw the towel into the sink and grabbed the port screen, skimming through the rest of the article before following a link about pack hierarchy. Wolves travel in packs, groups that range from 6 to 15 members and have an established hierarchy. At the top of the social structure are the alpha male and alpha female, a mated pair, though they are frequently the only wolves in the pack who will breed and produce a litter. All other pack members assist in feeding and raising the pups. Males will establish their alpha rank through ritual combat. One wolf may challenge another, resulting in a fight that determines which wolf is superior. Repeated victories will earn respect for the male wolf and ultimately decide the pack leader. The next step in the pack hierarchy are the beta wolves, who often hunt and provide protection to the cubs. The omega wolf is the lowest ranking in the pack. Often treated as a scapegoat, the omegas are occasionally picked on by the rest of the pack. This can lead to the omega drifting to the edges of the pack's territory and on occasion leaving the pack altogether. A flurry of clucking startled Scarlet. Setting the port on the counter, she peered out the window. Her stomach flipped. The shadow of a man stretched across the yard, the gathered hens skittering away from him toward their coop. As if sensing her, Wolf glanced up and spotted Scarlet in the window. She spun away. Swallowing the rising panic, she ran into the foyer and snatched her grandmother's shotgun from its corner beneath the stairs. Wolf hadn't moved by the time she'd thrown open the front doors. The chickens were already growing familiar with the stranger, pecking around his feet in search of falling seed. Scarlet settled the gun in her arms and released the safety. If he was surprised, he didn't show it. "What do you want?" she yelled, startling the hens away from him. The light from the house spilled around her onto the gravel. Her shadow shifted across the drive, almost brushing Wolf's feet. The madness from the fight was gone, and the bruises on his face were nearly invisible. He seemed calm and unconcerned with the gun, though he didn't move toward her. After a long silence, he raised both hands to either side of his head, open-palmed. "I'm sorry I frightened you again." As if to make amends, he backed away. 2, 3 steps. "You have a gift," she deadpanned. "Keep your hands up." His fingers twitched in acknowledgement. Scarlet paced out from the door, but she stopped when the gravel bit into her bare feet, her senses prickled, waiting for Wolf to make any sudden movement, but he was as still as the stone house behind her. "I've already calmed the police," she lied, her thoughts stretching back to the port screen left on the kitchen counter. His eyes caught the light, and Scarlet suddenly remembered her dad sleeping upstairs. Was it too much to hope that her raised voice could dislodge him from his stupor? "How did you get here?"
"Walked. Well, ran, mostly," he said, hands still raised.
The wind was making messy patterns in his hair. "Would you like me to leave?" The question took her off guard. "I want you to tell me what you're doing here. If you think I'm afraid of you..."
"I'm not trying to scare you."
With a glare, she peered down the barrel to make sure she still had him in line. "I wanted to talk about what you said at the fight, about the tattoo, and what happened to your grandmother and your father." Scarlet clenched her jaw. "How did you find out where I live?" His brow furrowed as if in confusion. "Your ship has the name of your farm on it, so I looked it up. I don't mean you any harm. It just seemed like you needed help."
"Help?" heat flared in her cheeks. "From the psychopath who tortured my dad, who kidnapped my grandmother?"
"It wasn't me," he said, his tone unwavering. "There are other tattoos like mine. It was someone else."
"Oh, really? Like you're part of some cult or something?"
The feathered body of one of the chickens pressed against her leg, and she started, barely managing to keep the gun level. "Or something," he said with a flinching shrug. One foot crunched against the gravel.
"Don't come any closer," Scarlet yelled.
The chicken clucked and dawdled away.
"I will shoot, you know."
"I know." A flicker of kindness passed over him, and he pointed at his temple. "You want to aim for the head. That usually makes for a fatal shot. Or if you're feeling shaky, the torso. It's a larger target."
"Your head looks pretty big from here."
He laughed, the expression changing everything about him. His stance relaxed, his face warmed. A disgusted growl vibrated in Scarlet's throat. This man had no right to be laughing. Not when her grandmother was still out there. Wolf dropped his arms and folded them over his chest. Before Scarlet could order them up again, he was speaking. "I'd been hoping to impress you last night, but it seemed to backfire on me. I'm not usually impressed by men with anger management issues who kidnap my grandmother and follow me around, and I didn't kidnap your grandmother." For the first time, his words were sharp, stealing the tirade out of Scarlet's mouth. His attention fell to the gaggle of chickens as they tramped around the door. "But if it really was someone with a tattoo like mine, I may be able to help figure out who did. Why should I believe you?" He took the question seriously, contemplating for a long while. "I have no proof other than what I told you last night. I've been in Rayu for nearly 2 weeks. They know me at the tavern. They know me at the fights. If your father were to see me, he wouldn't recognize me, nor would your grandmother." He shifted his weight like he was growing anxious from too long standing still. "I want to help." Frowning, Scarlet squinted down the double barrels. If he was lying, then this was one of the men who had taken her grandmother from her. He was cruel. He was evil. He deserved a bullet between his eyes. But he was her only lead. "You'll tell me everything. Everything." Pulling her finger off the trigger, she lowered the shotgun so that it pointed instead at his thigh, a non-fatal target. "And you'll keep your hands where I can see them at all times. Just because I'm letting you into this house doesn't mean I trust you."
"Of course," he nodded, all compliance. "I wouldn't trust me either."
Chapter 12. Scarlet gestured with the gun for Wolf to come inside. Glowering as he crept forward toward the landing, he seemed to brace himself, taking in the stucco walls and dark-stained staircase before passing by her into the hallway. He had to duck so his head wouldn't hit the doorframe. Scarlet kicked the door shut, refusing to take her eyes from Wolf, who stood still and hunched, his body compacting itself as well as it could. His attention shifted to the rotating digital photos on the wall that showed Scarlet as a child munching on raw peas from the garden, golden autumnal fields, her grandmother 40 years younger in her first military uniform. This way, he followed her gesture into the kitchen. Scarlet glanced at the picture just as her grandmother vanished before marching in after him. She spotted her port screen on the counter, still displaying a picture of an alpha male with its mate, and slipped it into her pocket. Without turning her back on the street fighter, she propped the gun into a corner of cabinets and grabbed her red hoodie from the back of one of the chairs. She felt less vulnerable as she shoved her arms into the sleeves, even more so when she snatched a carving knife from its block on the counter. Wolf's eyes flickered once to the knife before taking in the rest of the kitchen. They landed on the wire basket beside the sink, his pupils widening with hunger. 6 glossy red tomatoes filled the basket. Scarlet frowned as Wolf dropped his gaze. "You must be hungry," she muttered, "after all that running." "I'm fine. Have a seat," she said, gesturing at the table with the knife. Wolf hesitated only for a moment before pulling out a chair. He didn't scoot it back in as he sat, as if he wanted to give himself enough space to jump up and run if he had to. "Hands where I can see them." He looked a breath away from amusement as he leaned forward and splayed his fingers on the edge of the table. "I can't imagine what you must think of me after last night." She scoffed. "Really? You can't imagine?" She grabbed the cutting board and slammed it down on the table opposite from Wolf. "Would you like me to clue you in?" He lowered his gaze, rubbing a finger into an ancient scratch in the wood. "It's been a long time since I lost control like that. I don't know what happened." "I hope you didn't come here for sympathy." Refusing to set down the knife or turn her back on him, she had to make 2 more trips from the counter to the table, grabbing first a loaf of bread, then 2 tomatoes. "No, I told you why I'm here. It's just that I spent all night trying to figure out what went wrong." "Perhaps you should go back to the moment you decided that street fighting was a valid career choice." A long silence went unbroken as Scarlet, still standing, sliced a hunk off the bread and tossed it at Wolf, who caught it easily. "You're right," he said, picking at the crust. "That's probably where it started." He sank his teeth into the bread, barely chewing before he swallowed. Baffled that he had no argument, no excuse, Scarlet grabbed one of the tomatoes and set it on the cutting board, feeling the need to keep her hands busy. She ruthlessly pushed the knife into its flesh, ignoring the seeds that oozed out onto the board. Skewering the tomato slices, she held them out to him, not bothering with a plate. A mess of breadcrumbs on the table were quickly joined with watery red juice. His gaze was distant as he took the slices from her. "Thank you." Scarlet threw the tomato's vine into the sink and wiped her hands on her jeans. Outside, the sun was rising fast, and the chickens were growing restless with their clucking, wondering why Scarlet hadn't fed them breakfast when she'd been out. "It's so peaceful here," Wolf said. "I'm not going to hire you." Grabbing the mug of cold and forgotten coffee, Scarlet finally sat down opposite Wolf. The knife lingered on the cutting board just beyond her fingers. She waited until he was licking the last of the tomato juices from his fingers. "So, what's the story with the tattoo?" Wolf glanced down at his forearm. The kitchen light was making his eyes sparkle like gems, but this time they weren't making Scarlet flustered. All she cared about now were the answers those eyes were hiding. He extended his arm across the table so that the tattoo was fully in the light and pulled the skin taut, like he was seeing it for the first time. LSOP 962. Loyal soldier to the Order of the Pack, he said. Member 962. He released the skin and curled his shoulders, hunkering down in the chair. The biggest mistake I have ever made. Scarlet's skin tingled. And what exactly is the Order of the Pack? A gang most commonly referred to as the Wolves. They like to call themselves vigilantes and rebels and harbingers of change, but they're not much better than criminals, really. If I can ever afford it, I'll have this awful thing removed. A gust of wind rattled the oak tree outside the front door, and a flurry of leaves swished against the window. So you're not a part of it anymore? He shook his head. Scarlet glared across the table, unable to read him, unable to decipher if he was telling the truth. The Wolves, she murmured, letting the name sink into her brain. And do they do this often? Take innocent people out of their homes for absolutely no reason? They have a reason. Scarlet pulled the drawstring of her hood until it was almost strangling her before tugging the material back out again. Why? What would they want with my grandmother? I don't know. Don't tell me that. Is it ransom money? What? His fingers flexed in and out on the table. She was in the military, he said, gesturing toward the hallway. In those pictures, she was in uniform. She was a pilot for the EF, but that was years ago, before I was born. Then maybe she knows something, or they think she does. About what? Military secrets? Top secret weaponry? Scarlet scooted forward until her stomach pressed against the table's edge. I thought you said they were common criminals. What do you care about that? Wolf sighed. Criminals who think of themselves as harbingers of change. Scarlet gnawed on her lip. Right. So what? Are they trying to take down the government or something? Start a war? Wolf glanced out the window as the lights of a small passenger ship skirted along the edge of the field, the first workers arriving for their shift. I don't know. No, you do know. You're one of them. Wolf smiled humorlessly. I was nothing to them, hardly more than an errand boy. I wasn't let in on any executive plans. Scarlet folded her arms. Then take an educated guess. I know they stole a lot of weapons. They want people to be afraid of them. He shook his head. Maybe they want to get their hands on military weaponry. My grandma wouldn't know anything about that, and even if she did before, when she was a pilot, she wouldn't know now. Wolf opened his palms wide to her. I'm sorry. I don't know what else it could be, unless you think of something she may have been involved with. No, I've been racking my brain since she disappeared, but there's nothing. She was just... She's my grandma. She gestured out toward the fields. She owns a farm. She speaks her mind, and she doesn't like being told what to think, but she doesn't have any enemies, not that I know of. Sure, people in the town think she's a little eccentric, but there's no one who doesn't like her. And she's just an old woman. She clasped both her hands around the coffee mug and sighed. You must know how to find them, at least. Find them? No, it would be suicide. She tensed. It's not for you to decide. Wolf scratched behind his neck. How long ago did they take her? 18 days. Hysteria worked its way up her throat. They've had her for 18 days. His attention was plastered to the table, troubled lines drawn into his brow. It's too dangerous. The chair slammed against the door as Scarlet bolted up. I ask for information, not a lecture. I don't care how dangerous they are. That's just one more reason I need to find them. Do you know what they could be doing to her right now while you're wasting my time? What they did to my father, A slam echoed through the house, and Scarlett jumped, barely catching herself before she tripped over the fallen chair. She glanced past Wolf, but the hall was empty. Her heart hiccuped. "Dad?" She bolted into the foyer and thrust open the front door. "Dad?" But outside, the drive was already empty. Chapter 13. Scarlett sprinted into the drive, the gravel biting into her feet. The wind kicked at her curls, throwing them across her face. "Where did he go?" she said, tucking her hair into her hood. The sun was fully over the horizon already, flecking the crops with gold and filling the drive with swaying shadows. "Perhaps to feed your birds?" Wolf pointed as a rooster pecked his way back around the side of the house, meandering toward the vegetable garden. Ignoring the biting gravel, Scarlet jogged around the corner. Oak leaves spun on the wind. The hangar and barn and chicken coop all stood silent in the buffeting dawn. There was no trace of her father. "He must have been looking for something, or—" Scarlet's heart skipped. "My ship!" She ran, ignoring the rocky drive, the prickling weeds. She nearly plowed into the hangar's door, but managed to grasp the handle and yank it open just as a crash shook the building. "Dad!" But he was not inside the ship, preparing to fly off with it, as she'd feared. Instead, he was standing on top of the cabinets that ran the length of the far wall, reaching into the overhead cupboards and tossing their contents onto the floor. Paint cans, extension cords, drill bits. An entire standing toolbox had been tipped over, flooding the concrete with screws and bolts, and two metal cabinets on the back wall stood wide open, showing an assortment of military pilot uniforms, coveralls, and a single straw gardening hat shoved into the corner. "What are you doing?" Scarlett strode toward him, then ducked and froze as a wrench sailed by her head. When a crash didn't follow, she glanced back to see Wolf gripping the wrench a foot from his face, blinking in surprise. Scarlett spun around. "Dad, what?" "There's something here," he said, yanking open another cupboard. He snatched up a tin can and tipped it open, mesmerized as hundreds of rusted nails crashed and clanged on the floor. "Dad, stop! There's nothing here!" She picked her way through the mess, more aware of rusty sharp bits than she had ever been of the jagged rocks outside. "Stop it! There is something here, Scar!" Tucking a metal barrel under one arm, her dad hopped off the counter and crouched, working the plug out from the hole in the top. Though he was also barefoot, the jumble of nails and screws didn't appear to bother him. "She has something, and they want it. It's got to be here, somewhere. But where?" The air filled with the pungent fumes of engine lubricant as her dad tipped over the barrel, letting the yellowish grease gurgle and spill out over his mess. "Dad, put it down!" She grabbed a hammer off the floor and held it overhead. "I will hit you! I swear it!" He finally looked at her with that same haunted madness. This was not her father. This man was not vain and charming and self-indulgent. All the things she admired as a child and despised as a teenager. This man was broken. The stream of oil became a light drizzle. "Dad, put down the barrel. Now!" His lips trembled as his attention shifted away, focused on the small delivery ship not a body's length from him. "She loved flying," he murmured. "She loved her ships. Dad! Dad!" Standing, her dad heaved the barrel into the back window of the ship, a hairline fracture cobwebbed out on the glass. "Not my ship!" Scarlett dropped the hammer and ran for him, stumbling her way over tools and debris. The glass shattered with the second hit, and her dad was already hauling himself through the shards. "Stop it!" Scarlett grabbed him around the waist and dragged him out of the ship. "Leave it alone!" He thrashed in her hold, his knee catching Scarlett in the side, and they both fell onto the floor. A canister bit into Scarlett's thigh, but all she could think about was tightening her hold on her dad, trying to lock his swinging arms to his sides. Blood was on his hands where he grabbed the broken glass, and a gash in his side was already turning crimson.
"Let me go, Scar. I'm going to find it. I'm going to," he cried out as he was lifted away from her.
Instinctively, Scarlet clung, still trying to subdue him, until she realized that Wolf was there, dragging her dad to his feet. She let go, panting. One hand went to rub her throbbing hip.
"Let me go!"
Craning his head, her dad snapped his teeth at the air. Ignoring his struggles, Wolf bound his wrists with one hand and stretched the other out toward Scarlet. No sooner had her palm sunk onto his than her dad's screams renewed.
"He's one of them! One of them!"
Wolf yanked Scarlet to her feet and released her, using both arms to restrain her struggling father. Scarlet almost expected to see foam at the corners of her dad's mouth.
"The tattoo, Scar! It's them! It's them!"
She pushed her hair off her face.
"I know, Dad. Just calm down. I can explain. You can't take me back. I'm still looking. I need more time. Please, no more. No more."
He dissolved into sobs. Wolf's eyebrows drew together as he peered at the back of her father's drooped head. Then he grabbed a thin chain around his neck and pulled, snapping it. Her dad flinched, and when Wolf released him, sank heavily to the floor. Scarlet gawked at the necklace hanging from Wolf's fist, a small, unfamiliar charm dangling from it. She couldn't remember her father wearing any jewelry other than the monogamy band that he'd taken off within days of her mother figuring out the ring hadn't served its purpose and leaving him. "Transmitter," Wolf said, holding the charm up so that its silver sheen blinked in the light. It was no larger than Scarlet's pinky nail. "They've been tracking him, and I would guess listening in on everything as well." Scarlet's dad hugged his knees, rocking.
"Do you think they're listening right now?" Scarlet asked.
"Most likely." A firework exploded in her rib cage, and she launched forward, grabbing Wolf's fist in both hands.
"There's nothing here!" she screamed at the charm. "We're not hiding anything, and you have the wrong woman. You better bring my grandmother back, and I swear on the house I was born in, if you've hurt one hair, one wrinkle, one freckle on her body, I'm going to hunt every last one of you and snap your necks like the chickens you are. Do you understand? Bring her back!"
Throat hoarse, she fell back and released Wolf's hand. "Finished?" Trembling with anger, Scarlet nodded. Wolf dropped the transmitter on the floor, grabbed the hammer, and smashed it with a single, clean strike. Scarlet jumped as metal crunched against the concrete. "Do you think they knew he would come here?" Wolf said, standing. "They left him in our cornfield." Her father's voice rose between them, dry and empty. "They told me to find it."
"Find what?" Scarlet asked.
"I don't know. They didn't say, just that she's hiding something, something valuable in secret, and they want it."
"Wait, you knew?" said Scarlet. "You knew all along that you were bugged, and you didn't try to tell me? Dad, what if I'd said something or done something that made them suspect me? What if they do come after me next?"
"I didn't have a choice," he said. "It was the only way they would let me go. They said I could only have my freedom if I found what your grandmother was hiding, if I found some clue that would help."
"I had to get out of there, Scar. You don't know what it was like. I know they still have her, and I know you're coward enough to save your own skin and not worry about what's happening to her or what could happen to me."
Scarlet held her breath, waiting for him to deny it, to give some twisted excuse like he's always had, but he stayed perfectly still, perfectly silent, her skin flushed with anger.
"You're a disgrace to her, to everything she's ever stood for.
She would risk her life to protect either one of us. She would risk her life for a stranger if it was the right thing to do. But all you care about is yourself. I can't believe you're her son. I can't believe you're my father. He raised his haunted eyes to her. You're wrong, Scarlet. She watched them torture me. Me. And still she kept her secrets. A spark of defiance flickered over his face. There's something your grandmother never told us, Scar, and it's put both of us in danger. She's the selfish one. You don't know anything about her. No, you don't. You've been idolizing her since you were 4 years old, and it's blinded you to the truth. She betrayed us both, Scarlet. Blood pounding against her temples, Scarlet pointed out the door. Get out. Get off my farm and never come back. I hope I never see you again. He paled, the circles like bruises under his eyes. Slowly he peeled himself off the floor. You're going to abandon me too? My own daughter and my own mother, both turning against me? You abandon us first. Scarlet realized that in the 5 years since last she'd seen him, she'd come to match her father's height. They stood eye to eye, she burning up on the inside, he frowning as though he wanted to be sorry, but couldn't quite grasp the emotion. Goodbye, Luke. His jaw flexed. They'll come for me again, Scarlet, and it will be on your hands. Don't you dare. You're the one who was wearing that transmitter. You're the one who was willing to sell me out. He held her eyes for a long, slow count, like he was waiting for her to change her mind, waiting for her to welcome him back to the house, back into her life. But all Scarlet could hear was the crunch of the hammer against the transmitter. She thought of the burn marks on his arm and knew he would just as soon give her over for torture if it would have saved his own skin. Finally his gaze fell, and without looking at her, without looking at Wolf, her dad shuffled through the debris and out of the hangar. Scarlet's fists settled against her sides. She would have to wait. He would go into the house to collect his shoes. She imagined him rummaging through the kitchen for food before he went, or trying to hunt down some stray liquor bottles. She dared not run the risk of their paths crossing again before he was gone for good. The coward, the traitor. I'll help you. She crossed her arms, protecting her anger against the gentleness of Wolf's voice. She scanned the chaos all around her, the mess that would take weeks to put right. I don't need your help. I meant, I'll help get your grandmother back. Wolf ducked away like he was surprised he'd made the offer. It took a pathetically long time for her thinking to change directions, from the internal rant against her traitorous father to the hefty meaning behind Wolf's words. She blinked up at him and held her breath, imagining his words captured in a bubble that might blow away. You will? His head jerked in what could have been a nod. The wolves are headquartered in Paris. That's probably where they're keeping her. Paris. The word filled her up. A clue. A promise. She glanced at her ship and its shattered window. Renewed hatred flared for her father, but it deflated quickly. There wasn't time. Not now. Not when she had her first taste of hope in 2 endless weeks. Paris, she murmured. We can take the train from Toulouse. It's what, 8 hours? She hated the thought of being without her ship, but even the obnoxiously slow maglev train would be quicker than getting the window replaced. Someone will have to look after the farm while I'm gone. Maybe Emily, after her shift. I'll send her a comm. Then I just need to grab some clothes and... Scarlet, wait. We can't just rush up there. We need to think this through. Rush? We can't rush? They've had her for more than 2 weeks. This isn't rushing. Wolf's gaze darkened, and Scarlet paused, for the first time recognizing his unease. Look, she said, wetting her tongue. We'll have 8 hours on the train to think up something, but I can't stay here a moment longer. But what if your father is right? His shoulders stayed stiff. What if she has hidden something here? What if they come looking for it? She roughly shook her head. They can look all they want, but they won't find anything. My dad is wrong. Grandmare and I don't keep secrets. Chapter 14. Your Majesty. Kai turned away from the window that he'd been staring at half the morning, listening to the drone of the news anchors and military officials reporting on the escape of the most wanted convict in the Eastern Commonwealth. Chairman Wei stood in the doorway, Torin beside him. Both looked supremely unhappy. He gulped. Well? Wei stepped forward. They've gotten away. Kai's pulse hiccuped. He took a tentative step toward his father's desk and gripped the back of the chair. I've given the order to deploy our reserve fleets immediately. I am confident we'll have the fugitive found and taken into custody by sunset. With all respect, Chairman, you don't sound particularly confident. Though Wei puffed his chest out, his face took on a tinge of pink. I am, Your Majesty. We can find him. It's only that it's complicated by it being a stolen ship. All the tracking equipment has been stripped. Torin let out an irritated sigh. The girl has proven herself to be more clever than I would have given her credit for. Kai dragged his hand through his hair, extinguishing an unexpected spark of pride. There is also the issue of the girl being lunar, Wei added. Whoever captures her will just have to be alert, said Kai. They should all be made aware that she'll no doubt try to turn their minds against them. There is that, too, but not what I was referring to. In the past, we've had difficulty tracking lunar ships. It seems that they've learned how to disable our radar systems. I'm afraid we're not sure how they do it. Disable our radar systems? Kai glanced at Torin. Did you know about this? I've heard rumors, said Torin. Your father and I chose to believe that's all they were. Not all of my contemporaries agree with me on this matter, said Wei, but I myself am convinced it is the lunars disabling our equipment. Whether it's through their mental abilities or some other talent, I can't tell. Regardless, Lin Cinder won't get far. We'll have every resource searching for her. Tempering his inner turmoil, Kai molded his face into stone. Keep me informed. Of course, Your Majesty. There is one other thing I thought you might want to see. We finished going through our security footage from the prison. Wei gestured to the inlaid screen in Kai's desk. Rounding his chair, Kai tugged on his long sleeves, suddenly warm, and sat down. A comm from the Council of National Security rotated in the corner. Except comm, the screen brightened with footage of the prison, all white and glossy walls. It showed a long hallway lined with smooth doors and ID scanners. A prison guard moved into view and gestured at a door. He was followed by a short, old man wearing a gray cap. Kai jerked upward. It was Dr. Erlin. Volume up! Dr. Erlin's familiar voice filtered through the screen. I am the leading scientist of the Royal Leptomosis research team, and this girl is my prime test subject. I require blood samples from her before she leaves the planet. Looking miffed, he reached into a bag and pulled something out. A syringe, but the bag still bulged. It wasn't all that was inside it. I have my orders, sir, said the guard. You'll have to obtain an official release from the Emperor to be allowed entrance. Kai frowned as the doctor put the syringe back into the bag, knowing that Dr. Erlin had made such a request. All right. If that's protocol, I understand, said Dr. Erlin. And then he just stood there, serene and patient. After the space of a few heartbeats, Kai glimpsed the doctor's smile. There, you see, I have obtained the necessary release from the Emperor. You may open the door. Kai's jaw dropped as amazingly the guard turned toward the cell door, swiped his wrist across the scanner, and punched in a code. A green light flashed, and the door opened. Thank you kindly, said Dr. Erlin, passing the guard. I'll ask that you give us a bit of privacy. I won't be but a minute. The guard complied without argument. shutting the door and meandering in the direction they'd come from, leaving the screen empty. Kai glanced at Wei. Has that guard been questioned? Yes, sir. And his statement is that he remembers denying access to the girl, and then the doctor left. He was confounded when we showed him this footage. He claims to not remember any of it. How is that possible? Quay busied his hands by buttoning his suit jacket. It appears, Your Majesty, that Dr. Dmitri Erland glamored the guard into allowing him access to the prison cells. Hairs prickling beneath his collar, Kai slumped back in his chair. Glamored? You think he's lunar? That is our theory. Kai stared up at the ceiling. Cinder, lunar. Dr. Erland, lunar. Is it a conspiracy? Torin cleared his throat as he did whenever Kai mentioned some off-the-wall theory, though it seemed like a perfectly legitimate question to Kai. We're in the process of investigating all possibilities, said Torin. At least now we know how she escaped. We have other video that shows the prisoner glamoring the guard on the next shift, said Wei, and being shown to a new cell. In that footage, she has 2 feet and a different left hand from the one she entered the prison with. Kai shoved himself out of his chair. The bag, he said, pacing toward the windows. Yes, Dr. Erland was bringing her these tools, we must assume with the intention of assisting her escape. That's why he left. Kai shook his head, wondering how Cinder really knew Dr. Erland, what they'd really been doing all those times she'd come to see him at the hospital. Plotting? Conniving? Conspiring? I thought she was just fixing a med droid, he murmured to himself. I didn't even question. Stars, I've been so stupid. Your Majesty, said Wei, our few resources not searching for Lin Cinder have been dedicated to finding Dmitri Erland. He will be arrested as a traitor to the crown. Please excuse the interruption, said Nancy, the android who had once tutored Kai as a child, but had now taken on the more significant role of personal assistant. The android who had malfunctioned, was it not even 4 weeks ago, and had led him to his first meeting with Lin Cinder, back when she was nothing more to him than a renowned mechanic. Her Majesty, Lunar Queen Levana, has requested an immediate I will not be announced by an android. Huey and Torin spun around as Queen Levana swooped in and backhanded Nancy across her single blue sensor. Eyes flaming. The android no doubt would have toppled onto her back if stabilizing hydraulics hadn't kicked in just in time to catch her. The queen's usual entourage, Sybil Mara, head thaumaturge, her role in the lunar court seemed to be a cross between a doting lapdog and a gleeful servant who delighted in seeing to Levana's cruelest request. Kai had once seen her attack and nearly blind an innocent servant at the queen's bidding without a hint of hesitation. She was followed by another thaumaturge, one ranked beneath Sybil, who had dark skin and piercing eyes and no purpose, it seemed to Kai, other than to stand behind his queen and look smug. Sybil's personal guard followed, the blonde man who had held Cinder during the ball when Levana first threatened her life. Even after a month of their being guests in his palace, Kai didn't know his name. A second guard, his hair flaming red, had been the one to jump in between a bullet and Levana at the ball, taking it squarely in the shoulder. It seemed that bullet wounds weren't enough to let one off royal guard duty, though, and the only indication of the wound was the lump of bandage beneath his uniform. Your Majesty, Kai said, addressing the queen with, he thought, an admirable lack of contempt. What a pleasant surprise. One more patronizing comment, and I will have you slice off and nail your own tongue to the palace gate.